spelled G-E.
G-double-E. And he made me aware of the fact that I did have a brain if I'd use it.
Mm-hmm. Were you a bright child?
No. I would consider myself I was about a 70%er.
Mm-hmm.
Right through. And it was, at times, I found some of the subjects a real struggle for me, mathematics particularly.
Me too.
Yeah. I was a complete dolt.
Was it because you were a dolt, or was it because you were perhaps a little bit lazy? Because that's my problem.
Well,
right?
I think probably it was. But I'd get sort of a mental block.
Yeah.
Now, I had no problem reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
I could reason out. I could work proportions, and I could reason things. But when I got to high school and came to algebra, I was a complete clown.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't get the idea of why we had to do this. Why did you have to work out equations? Why do you have to have, binomial theorems?
Various Pythagorean theorems.
Yeah. No, the geometry, we were divided, it was geometry and algebra.
Mm-hmm.
Now the geometry, that had reason to it, I could reason it out. But algebra, no, it was just nebulous. And when I finally, my last year I had to take math, it was a prereq right up into the end of first year university.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Gage, who was later on became the registrar at UBC,
mm-hmm.
called me in after I'd written the exam, and he says, Adam, he says, were you sick the morning you wrote the algebra? And I said, yes, sir, I've been sick ever since I first saw it. And he says, well, he says, you certainly... he said, you certainly didn't do too well.
Had you passed or failed?
No, I'd failed. But he said, you did so well in the math, in the geometry. He says, my Gika, you got 87% in geometry. He says, I just can't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, well, I'm quite sure you, Mr. Gage, that I didn't cheat. I can reason, I can see the reason, and I can see that why geometry is necessary, but I can't see this algebra stuff at all.
Did he understand that?
He understood it, and he says, I'll give you 25, that's enough to pass you in the algebra, and he says, the 87% in geometry will give you your math. So that's the way we'll do it, so that's the way I got it. And I just heaved one great big sigh of relief at the end of first year university.
You at least got that out of the way.
That was out of the way.
Yeah. What did you study?
And I always felt, why should I have to do this? My God, there are people who like doing this, and if I ask them to do it, they'll do it for me. I can do other things. If they ask me to do something for them, I'll reciprocate. I'll do it for them if they don't like doing what I like doing.
But some people get pleasure from doing that,
yeah.
Working with numbers and figures.
Why don't they do?
Yeah.
My son-in-law, he just loves doing it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it's no challenge to me because I won't face up to the challenge.
Yeah. So you graduated what, in what year? High school?
In what year? 26. I took a year out.
Mm-hmm.
In 25 I went up in the tier. My brother-in-law and sister were up in Caslow. He was teaching his first assignment as a teacher in Caslow. And I took a year out and I went up and I worked in a mine.
What kind of mine?
Silver, lead, and zinc.
Mm-hmm.
Fiddling with galena.
What is galena?
Silver, lead, and zinc. I didn't enjoy it very much. Of course, I never liked work anyway. But... I worked there, and then I came back.
Was it a year well spent? Did it help mature you?
Well, it matured me. Certainly did, working with chaps who were my seniors, and living in a bunkhouse, and having to fight bed bugs and things like that.
Well, I suppose that would have been a great experience for you.
Well, it was.
Good or bad? The bad aspects, do you think?
Well, there were bad aspects to it. If I'd wanted to fall into bad ways, there are lots of people in the staff at the mine who would quite
help you along.
Help me along, sure. But no, it was good experience. And another thing that I lay a lot of my good experience too was the way the firemen treated me. I learned a lot from them because they were not ignorant men. And I learned a lot from them, even though I didn't do my homework at night. But it was, it stood me in good stead how to handle men.
Well, there are some things you can't learn from doing homework, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
How to relate with people.
That's right.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the Naval League you were a member of.
The Navy League, the Boys Naval Brigade?
That's it, Boys Naval Brigade.
Yeah, well, this Boys Naval Brigade...
it was a forerunner to the Sea Cadets.
The Sea Cadets, yeah. You know, as a child in Victoria, if you had any desire to wear a uniform, and most boys like to, there were so many you could join if you wished to.
Boy Scouts.
Boy Scouts. Yeah. There was the Boys Naval Brigade, but there weren't any Army cadets at that time.
Why not?
Only in school. They had school cadets.
Did they really?
Oh, yes.
So when you were at the various schools in high school, they had...
No, in elementary.
Mm-hmm. Was it like an officer cadet training school? Like
no, it was just...
Cadet Corps.
It was just some form of military training. It was a cadet corps. Mm-hmm. But when I was at Margaret Jenkins School, I was the cadet captain.
Mm-hmm.
And I...
So at that early age, you showed some affinity for military.
Right.
Yeah.
It was just sort of felt natural. Yeah. It was only natural. I felt quite at home as a 12-year-old boy at Margaret Jenkins School, giving commands to my peers.
Mm-hmm. I would almost think that by 1920, the idea of having a military cadet corps at a school would be almost anachronistic because of what it...
Oh, no, it carried on until, heavens, we had, I was cadet instructor at George J. School. I had cadets at George J. when I was teaching.
This would be in the 30s.
In the 30s, yeah.
Did people take it seriously this time?
Not the general public.
I would
and it was optional. The kids didn't have to join the cadet corps at school.
It was like phys ed, I suppose.
It was like phys ed, and the only thing is they did have a uniform,
mm-hmm.
and they did have a rifle.
Was it the Enfield or Ross or something like that?
They were Ross. Some of the little 11-year-olds couldn't practically climb up the thing to slope arms.
Mm-hmm. Awfully tall guns.
Yeah, they were. Yeah. Long right barrel.
Heavy, too.
For the younger ones, we had dummies. Just wooden ones, and they could play around with them. There were no bayonets, though.
No.
They just had the rifle.
Would hurt themselves, I should think.
Yeah. But I used to take my cadets down to the armory, and we used to we went on the range, range down in the basement in the armory.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of them developed into darn good shots. There was one lad who later on served with the Scottish. He became a crack shot, a chap named Thurburn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if he didn't go to Bisley, he made the Canadian team a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. He was that good.
Huey Thurburn, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about the Naval League, or the Naval...
Yeah.
I always get it mixed up.
The Navy, the Boys
Naval Brigade. That's right. Why did you join?
Well, there was a lad by the name of I always get these two names mixed. It wasn't Evan Elford. It was the name like that. It'll come to me. he was at Margaret Jenkins School, and just the close of the war. It'd be 1918 or beginning of 19. There was a ship, down the Point Hope shipyards. They had built a couple of wooden sailing ships.
Mm-hmm.
One was the Simon F. Ptolemy,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was a ship called the Laurel Whalen. I happened to, for some reason, I was down there and I saw this launching of this ship. And here were these boys in white, summer whites, and with rifles.
Mm-hmm.
And they were wearing the old-fashioned straw hat, the summer hat of the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite taken with these. And
by the uniform alone?
By the uniform got me, and the fact there was a rifle.
Had you fired a rifle before? Were you familiar with them?
No. Not really. And so this chap, I saw him in the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got back to school the next day, I said, could I join? He said, sure. He said, you can join. I'll meet you at such and such a place and we'll go down. And I met him at the corner of Superior and Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we walked down Superior to the Cadet Seaman's Institute. And they looked me over and they decided I looked like, I guess, the kind of material they wanted. And I got outfitted that very night. And they gave me a duffel bag. It was almost as big as myself. And I got all the clothes in it.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I have a tape with what the stuff that they stuffed in this duffel bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to get home.
Were you given all this? You didn't have to pay for it.
Oh, no. This was provided.
Uh-huh.
Through the auspices of the Navy League of Canada, it was a good outfit. They provided you with a blue serge, number one dress,
mm-hmm.
A set of dungarees, that's like jean material that's in present day jeans,
mm-hmm.
and all the other accoutrement that goes with it, two hats, white and navy blue for winter, and a navy blue sweater, heavy sweater, for winter wear,
mm-hmm.
and a white dickie for summer wear. So, actually, the gaiters, the brown gaiters,
mm-hmm.
which you wore with black boots, that always bothered me. Funny, you know. But, I got myself dressed up and appeared on parade. The next week, we paraded down to the JBAA boat house,
mm-hmm.
and went out in the boat and we did cutter drill.
This was your first experience of rowing?
That was my first experience of rowing. Well, I'd rowed a boat before.
Mm-hmm. But not this kind of boat?
Not this kind of boat.
Mm-hmm.
And it took two boys to handle one oar. And when they said ship oars, you didn't know which boy was going to lift the thing up. You had to hold it up perpendicular, you know, like
mm-hmm.
this. And, well, anyway, this, we trained for the 1 year, and then the next year I went out to the summer camp.
Okay, this would be 1920, right, or 1919?
This would be 1919.
Okay.
In the meantime, they'd formed a band.
Mm-hmm.
And they held the practices in the old Pemberton building, which is now the Yarrow building,
mm-hmm.
in the basement. Well, that meant I didn't have to go way out to the end of James Bay to take my training, so I decided I'd become a bugler.
And of course, you had no music experience before this?
Only what I got at school.
Piano, I guess.
No, I couldn't even play the piano. I could read music from just tonic sofa and what little bit we'd had in school from a music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't long before I was tootling away on this bugle, and I'm sure the neighbors must have put up with trying to learn a bugle, and I'd stand out on our back porch and blow my heart out.
And I suppose if you were like me, and I played the trumpet for a few years, you played the last post quite often.
Oh, yeah. I learned all the normal calls, Navy calls they were. And I got them. How I got them, I don't know. I learned the Navy Reveille, which is a long one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course the others are the same as our last post, the same as the Navy's last post. And the fire call and the meal calls, the standard calls of use them at camp, at the camp that I attended.
And could you do it with a fair degree of proficiency?
Well, that I couldn't tell you. It satisfied me anyway. I thought I was a pretty hot player. I don't think I was any Louis Armstrong. No. Not on a bugle, anyway. Well, at this camp, they decided to have a church parade.
And this camp was where?
This camp here, it's in the picture. This was on the...
In the gorge.
Crow Baker Estate, where the Gorge Road Hospital is now. It was a good camp.
Mm-hmm.
Quite enjoyed it. The meals were good, and they looked after us well, and they kept us busy.
Well, how long would the camp have been? A week? Two?
I think a week. Not much more. It couldn't have been more than that.
Yeah.
And we had to have it. We had to have, of course, our church parade. Well, it must have been more than a week, because the padre or whoever was the sky pilot who was responsible for looking after the boys' spiritual welfare,
mm-hmm,
came to me and he says, "Can you play a cornet?" And I said, "No, I can't play a cornet." "Oh," he says, "that's too bad." He said, "We thought you might play Stand Up for Jesus at the church parade." I felt like saying, "No, I'd rather sit down for Christ's sake."
You should have.
Anyway, they produced this silver trumpet. Silver cornet. It wasn't a trumpet, it was a cornet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can play Stand Up for Jesus, and you don't need one valve. So I got onto that.
Mm-hmm.
And I played Stand Up for Jesus. And I forget what the other one was. It was a simple one. It was a doxology. "Praise God from whom all blessings flow."
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the key of E-flat. It
must have sounded awfully strange coming out of a cornet. But I suppose you have to improvise when you're in the field, don't you?
Yeah. So they sang to it. That was something.
What sort of training would you do? Were there any rifle done?
We didn't do any rifle work, as far as I can recall.
Yeah. Was it mostly cutters?
Yeah, it was mostly boat drill.
Yeah. Any sailing?
No sailing. But as I say, we did this stint, and we went out a couple of times out to Petter Bay,
mm-hmm,
in this government tug, the Restless.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned a bit of seamanship there. And then the old Algerine, the HMS Algerine, was lying down at where the Information Bureau is now, just a dock in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to use her for doing gun drill. She had a 2-inch gun up in the forepeak.
Which you could fire? Or
no, you couldn't fire. It was just, you went through the procedures and the training for changing positions as the various positions. Apparently it was it required a 4 or 5 man crew to operate or even a 2-inch gun.
Mm-hmm. To aim, to lay, and all that.
Yeah, to aim and to lay and it was a breech loader.
Mm-hmm.
So you had fun opening the breech and pretending you were putting a round in, closing the breech. And
I'm sure you were bored of that rather easily.
Because
when you're 12 years old, you can make it up pretty easily, can't you?
Mm. Then we also, the old Rainbow was lying in Swinemouth Harbor.
Was it still?
Yeah, she was still there.
Mm. Operational?
Oh, no. She was decommissioned. But we used to go on her, and we used to do gun drill on her, because she had some 6-inch guns, I think, a couple of 6-inch guns,
mm-hmm,
a couple of gun turrets. And we thought we were pretty hot stuff, didn't we? You know. Well, then when I turned 13, I thought I'd had enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
And
you retired with honors from.
Well, I don't know if I retired with honors, but I got out of the Sea Cadets or the Boys Naval Brigade.
With the idea of doing what? Going doing something else?
Well, of course, we had the, at 14, we had the high school cadets.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I gravitated to the band and the high school cadets.
Playing the cornet or a bugle?
Playing a bugle. And I became the bugle sergeant. I was three stripes. That was pretty important for a 14 or 15-year-old boy to have on his arm.
This is the drum and bugle corps?
The drum and bugles of the high school cadets.
Yeah.
And,
I guess you did a lot of parade work, didn't you?
Not an awful lot.
Yeah.
I don't think the cadet instructors at high school had too much interest in the... You see, the Strathcona Trust gave $2 for every boy over the age of 13 to the cadet instructor for his services, and this was just extra money for the cadet instructors.
Mm-hmm.
Something to tide you over this summer when you weren't getting any pay. then, after I got out of high school, you're going to ask me about some of the teachers who made an impression on me.
I suppose in high school specifically. Like you said before, I think, that your main subject was history.
Yeah. Well, the content subjects.
Mm-hmm. History, English Lit, the humanities, I suppose.
Yeah. And agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And I took agriculture because another thing that stumped me was Latin. And why it did, I don't know. I think it was I got a very, very poor start in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
The teacher who had me the first year in Latin was a very sick man. He had cancer, and he was trying to carry on his work at school, and he had cancer of the esophagus, and it was slowly taking his voice away, and of course he was, as a school teacher, no voice, and well, he died a couple of years later, but it was tragic. And so...
Was Latin something that was required at the time?
Well, you had to take Latin. I took French. And you had to take two. You had to take two languages.
Mm-hmm. What sort of choice did you get? Latin and Greek.
You had Latin, Greek, German, and English.
Mm-hmm. And French.
And French. Yeah. So I took French and I took Latin. Well, they started this a course in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a chap named H.O. English, Harry English,
mm-hmm.
who was the agriculture teacher. And I quite enjoyed it. I got into it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, when I passed out of high school, I passed out at Victoria High School with the highest marks in agriculture. And a chap named Knight, Dr. Knight, a veterinarian, and Dr. Gunn, another veterinarian, because I got the highest marks in agriculture, I was invited to be a clerk over at the Willows Exhibition. And I went out clerking to these judges,
mm-hmm.
and they handed me a score sheet, and they said, here, you do the judging along with me, and let's see how we compare. The both of them said that.
Mm-hmm.
And we did beef cattle, and we did dairy cattle, and we did horses, and pigs, and sheep, and so on. And I had a lot of fun.
And how did you do in comparison?
Quite well. Quite well. As a matter of fact, Dr. Knight suggested to me that he would put me through UBC High School of Agriculture,
mm-hmm.
and then I could repay him after I got my veterinary BDS.
Mm-hmm. Were there any scholarships you could have taken?
I was too keen at that time to get into the teaching. I felt that was my 40. And so I turned him down. He had stipulations. In other words, when he retired, I was to sort of...
replace him?
Pay him.
I see.
It would be part of his superannuation out of my salary. I would pay him so much a month.
Mm-hmm.
Superannuation. This is what some of the great musicians do, you know,
mm-hmm.
with their protege.
As a form of paying them back,
yes.
In the end,
yeah.
when
but I, Yeah,
good idea, actually.
It's an excellent idea, but it depended how long he was going to live. He'd live till 90, I'd still be doing it.
Yeah. Or depending on his point of view, you could die quite early, too.
That's true. Of course, the risk was 50-50, wasn't it? Yeah. I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't thought of dying yet, either.
Good for you.
So, it was a little bit foreign to me at that time.
Yeah.
Well, so then I went to, after I got out of Vic High.
You spent a year mining.
Right? No, that was before. That was before, that was in, when I was 15.
Before you went to high school?
I was in high school 2 years, and then I took the year out.
Mm-hmm.
Then I came back and took final year. It was only a 3-year course at that time in high school.
Till grade 11?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And grade 11 gave you, well, you graduated in grade 11. And
at that time you went up to Victoria College?
Victoria High School, Victoria Normal School.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the year 27-28. And I graduated out of Victoria High School June 28. Normal School. PNS, Provincial Normal School.
And did that give you a teaching certificate?
A diploma.
Which meant what?
Which was what equal to a third class teacher certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the lowest on the ladder.
But it gave you the right to teach
it
in the
province. It gave you the right to teach in the province of British Columbia.
If you could get a posting.
If you could, that's right. Well, I got a posting at a place called Yak.
Yak.
Isn't that a great name? Y-A-H-K.
Yeah.
It was about 20 miles this side of Cranbrook in the Moyer Valley. Between Creston and Cranbrook.
Was it a large school?
105 students. It was a three-room school. We split it up so we had 35 each.
And you were teaching which grades?
I was teaching the middle grades. Four, five, six, seven. Yeah, four, five, six, seven.
Did you enjoy this?
Very much. And I sure had a challenge, I tell you. The CPR, there was a CPR mill. That was the purpose of the town. That's why the town was there. And they brought in about 8 or 10 Norwegian families.
From Norway?
Straight from Norway.
To work in this mill?
To work in this mill.
Mm-hmm.
They arrived there about the beginning of August. And when school took up, I found that I had... of the 35, I had about 17 Norwegians
mm-hmm.
who couldn't speak a word of English.
Mm-hmm. And so, you didn't know any Norwegian, I take it?
Not at that time. But I learned quickly. Fortunately, there was a 21-year-old boy who had taken a couple of years of University of Oslo.
In English.
And he had learned English, and he spoke it reasonably well.
So you used him as an interpreter, I think.
So we got together, and we went to the chairman of the school board was a local grocer, and we got sheets of brown paper, rolls of brown paper, and we drew pictures of everything we could think of.
Mm-hmm.
And
books,
we put
cars, dishes.
Boys, girls, fish.
With the English and the Norwegian equivalent.
Right. And I used these things, I just ignored the English kids there for the first, right up until Christmas time. When I say I ignored them, they...
Kept them busy, but you spent most of your time...
Yeah, but I gave them seat work to do. They did a lot of seat work. Poor devils, I felt sorry for them.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing, I couldn't do anything else if I wanted to get these new Canadians into the stream as fast as I could.
Yeah.
But by Easter of that school year, there was no Norwegian being spoken on the school grounds even.
Mm-hmm.
They were all speaking English.
Were they speaking it well? Or?
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Accents were quickly disappearing. And mind you, I learned a lot of Norwegian. I learned a lot of words that were I wasn't supposed to learn, too.
That makes it more fun.
Yeah, it made it quite interesting.
Do you still know the Norwegian?
No, if you don't use it.
It goes quickly, doesn't it?
It goes very quickly.
How long did you stay at Yak?
1 year.
Just 1 year?
Yeah.
Was that so that you could get some experience outside?
That was the idea. And then I got leave of absence from the Scottish to do my year in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Then
we'll come back to the Scottish in a minute.
Yeah, and then I applied for a job in Victoria,
mm-hmm.
and fortunately I got it.
Where was this at?
Hmm?
What school was this at?
George Jay School.
Where is that?
Where is it? Cook and Princess.
Okay, yes, I know. I know the area. I don't know the school. Is it still there?
Oh, yes, very much so. You don't see it from Cook Street. At least you can go past it. You won't notice it.
Mm-hmm.
But there, I stepped into my job there with a class. I never had less than 45 in a class in Victoria.
Teaching again the middle grades?
Yeah, six and seven.
Mm-hmm. Was that?
I liked them the best of all because they haven't reached the age where they, like the grade eights and nines, where they think they know it all.
They're a bit cocky.
Oh, very cocky.
Yeah.
But the six and sevens aren't.
Yeah.
And I just love teaching them.
Did you teach them all through your career?
Yeah, pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Except what substituting I did up in the Cowichan Valley after the war. I didn't like that at all. The permissive age was upon me.
And you were from a past age.
I was from the structured system.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you sad to see corporal punishment go from the schools?
Very much so.
You thought it was, you think it is a necessity?
It's a deterrent. You don't have to use it, but all you need is the gentle persuader there.
Mm-hmm. I know I ran into it once. Didn't get it, but I had it threatened upon me, and it was enough to scare me out of doing it again.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And I deplore the fact that it's not in use today.
Mm-hmm.
You see, each teacher is entitled to discipline his own class. And then they moved one step back and they said, no, we'll take the corporal punishment out of the hands of the actual classroom teacher and make it the responsibility of the principal
mm-hmm.
of the school. Well, that to me was a regressive step.
Well, now they've taken it out of the hands of the principal.
And now they're taken out entirely.
Yeah.
It's...
But when I was young, it was in the hands of the principal, and he could dish out the strap if he so chose.
Yeah.
But now it's not even there anymore.
I know. It's not in the school.
It's with parents at home, supposedly. Which is not the most effective way of handling it.
As a matter of fact, a school teacher is supposed to be in loco parentis.
Mm-hmm.
And if... You can't even lay a hand on a child today. But if you appeal to the parents, they'll just laugh at you. They take the side of the child and say, "Oh, you just don't know how to handle my child."
Mm-hmm. Even though you've had 5 or 6 years of training,
right?
And you probably know it far better than the parent would.
Yeah.
Well, let's change the subject, and I don't want to talk about the Canadian Scottish
no.
just yet.
No.
Back to the First World War. You were here as a boy in Victoria.
Yeah.
What was Victoria like? We talked briefly about a riot, but I don't want to... We've talked about that, so we don't want to go into that anymore. About Victoria as a wartime city. What was the feeling like? Was it a good morale? Were you behind the war? Was a great deal of support for the war in Victoria?
Well, of course, see, I was only 6 or 5 when the war broke out.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the feeling of the people in Victoria is concerned, I really couldn't give you a qualified judgment on that. But
as a young boy, seeing...
Oh, as a young boy, yeah, and the effect it had on me. Of course, all the troops that were trained here or came in or concentrated here went out to the what was known as the BC Exhibition Park,
mm-hmm.
which we called it the Willows.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where that east down, south down, all the down... streets over there near Estevan
mm-hmm.
are located now. And that was a big area.
There was no development there. There was no houses.
Oh, a few on Musgrave, a few on Epworth, a few on Florence.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, Fair Street had a few on it.
But this was the area bridging what is now Willows Beach, that area down there?
No, it was inland from that.
Farther.
It was Canberra Bay Road was the boundary.
Mm-hmm.
Was the south was the east boundary of the Willows Park or Willows Exhibition Grounds.
And on these grounds themselves, they built barracks?
The buildings were already there.
Were they?
They had good big buildings to house the exhibition,
mm-hmm.
the annual exhibition. There was one called the Made in Victoria Building. That's where all products made in Victoria were exhibited.
Mm-hmm.
There was one called the Women's Institute Building. That was a big building. It had a beautiful wooden structure.
Mm-hmm.
Nice architecture. There was the grandstands themselves for the exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
There were two or three smaller buildings, but in all there were about eight or nine, I think, good-sized buildings and capable of accommodating troops in really reasonable accommodation.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps a bit windy.
Drafty. No, they weren't. They were well constructed.
Really?
Yes.
Because I have this image in my mind of quite barn-like structures.
Well, of course they were barn-like, and I think they'd be very difficult to heat.
Mm. Probably wood stoves and everything.
Yes, because they were only used for 2 weeks each September
mm-hmm.
for the
Labor Day,
for the purpose of the fair,
yeah.
BC Exhibition.
Will this fair run concurrently with the Saanichen Fair?
No, no fairs are supposed to run concurrently.
You didn't think so?
No, and I don't know. I think the Saanichen Fair always followed the BC Exhibition.
I see.
Because it comes in some, well...
It's on the Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
That.
Well, the BC Exhibition
mm-hmm.
took place 2 weeks, the last 2 weeks in August, I'm pretty sure.
I see.
Yeah. And then all the exhibitors went out to Saanichen.
Mm-hmm. So you saw much of what you saw at the...
Oh, yeah, sure. You know.
And they were both basically agricultural fairs.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Agricultural Association ran them.
Mm-hmm.
But they had they had, of course, buildings for the various livestock. They were all well-housed. There was a riding stable there that operated,
mm-hmm.
and it operated for many, many years. But it was operating as early as I know, 1916.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the cavalry made a great deal of use out of that.
Oh, very much. In fact, the cavalry of the 2nd CMR borrowed the horses so they could train the stable.
Mm-hmm.
And the fellow says, sure, you can have my horses provided you provide the food for them and your troopers look after them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the arrangement.
Yeah. How many troops would have been housed at this?
Well, I can name quite a number of battalions.
Mm-hmm.
I think the 50th Gordons marshaled there mm-hmm. first, and also the 2nd CMR, the 88th Battalion, the 88th Fusiliers.
Mm-hmm.
No artillery was there because they were garrison artillery and they were all out around Macaulay. Then came in turn succession, there was the 30th Battalion, the 48th Battalion,
mm-hmm.
the 102nd, the 103rd. The 103rd was the first to move out of the exhibition grounds and move into the armory
mm.
in 1915, fall of 15.
That's when the armory was built in 1915.
Yeah.
For what purpose? Because
They had decided that these armories were needed
for after the war or for during the war.
No, this was before 14.
Mm.
They decided that they were going to build up the militia of Canada, and they put these armories in. And a Victoria architect by the name of Bigger Staff Wilson won the competition. There must be at least five or six of his armory across Canada,
mm-hmm.
All the same style, different in sitting in different sites and adjusted to suit the various sites.
But still in the same?
All the same architecture.
Mm-hmm. So Victoria had quite a few units marshalling in its area, didn't it?
Well, yes.
And wasn't there some sort of, out in, on the Sandwich Peninsula out in Sydney, wasn't there some sort of military base there other than Pat Bay? At Pat Bay?
As far as I know, there, I remember a camp in Sydney, but they only went out there for camps.
Just for camps?
There was nothing, there was no militia other than right here
in Victoria.
In this area. There was the 88th Fusiliers,
mm-hmm.
And the 50th Gordons, and they were the only two infantry.
In Victoria?
In Victoria.
Again, slightly off topic, but what about Fort Rod Hill? Did you get out there very often? And that was an operational fort during the First War, with their the guns.
And Macaulay was, too.
Yeah.
During World War I, did I get out there?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but because my brother was stationed at, before they went overseas, they had a, their, the 62nd Battery was located at Fort Macaulay.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I used to go out to see my brother.
Yeah.
Fort Rod, I didn't see Fort Rod until 1927, 28.
Did you know that it was there, but just...
I knew it was there, but the militia and the permanent force had some of their summer training areas, and I took my junior NCO course on the grounds at Fort Rod.
Mm-hmm. Was it as beautiful a place then as it is now? They really made it into a beautiful park area, I take it.
Well, you should have seen it. As a matter of fact, I was partially instrumental in getting Fort Rod as a public...
Really?
Yeah. I was
beautiful
on
place. I love going out there.
I was on the committee. If it hadn't been for a chap named Jeff Darcy and myself, Joe Clary Hugh, Art Sherman, Doug Nelson, there wouldn't be any Fort Rod today. It was going to go to war assets and be
disposed of. Mm-hmm.
And we got onto it and we fought for it and we got it.
I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
It's a great historical site.
Yeah.
And I spent many an hour there.
Yeah, as soon as I heard, I got a wind at Crown Assets, as it was called then.
Mm-hmm. Was this in the late 40s, 50s?
Just when I became group commander in 55.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got wind as when it happened. I called Joe Clary, who was a lawyer here, and quite an influential man.
We've got a building named after him in Uvic. Matter of fact, I know his wife. She's a dermatologist in...
Yeah.
Victoria.
That's right. His daughter.
Is it his daughter?
Yeah. Not his wife. And a couple of other gunners. Joe was a gunner.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of other gunners. And I said, let's get on with this and see what we can do. And I got a hold of this chap, Darcy, who's he's a bit of a, I wouldn't call him a rabble rouser, but he'll stir things up.
Mm-hmm.
And he got... He gets a
little carried away.
He gets a little bit rabid. But by God, we did it.
That's for a good cause. A little bit of morbidity. All right.
Yeah.
But they were still operational during the First War with guns that had been in place.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps 1890s?
In 95. There was a Russian threat.
Mm-hmm.
And the British people got their guns out here. And they had, on Signal Hill, they had a naval gun. It was a pretty big thing. I don't know. I think it was about a 16-inch gun.
Mm-hmm.
But, God, when they fired it, it cost the taxpayer of Canada.
Untold hundreds.
Yeah, frankly, every window broke. Anywhere within a mile of that, of the firing of the big gun on Signal Hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's just above the present Squamalt dockyard.
Mm-hmm.
Not Maiden, but the old dockyard.
Yeah. From what I've heard from someone who works at Fort Rod Hill, they're in the process now of buying one of the vanishing guns?
Yeah, disappearing, they call them.
That's a disappearing gun.
There's a pair of them. They're in Norway.
That's right.
The same gun.
Mm-hmm. Whatever happened to the apparatus? Because we've got one barrel laying out in the field there.
Well, Capital Ironworks bought.
Really?
Yeah, and they started to cut them up. And it was so hard to cut them little things up that they gave up on the last, last barrel and they just left it there.
I know, when I first moved to Victoria, Capital Iron was famous for them. They would buy naval ships.
Oh, yeah, everything that they could turn into scrap.
Oh, and some of the stuff was just junk, like old gas masks and ammo
anything
belts.
Yeah.
And as a dumb kid, I would go out and buy that. I've still got a gas mask at home that I bought, a bayonet and helmets. All World War II vintage. Mm. It was a fun store to use to shop in. Now it's just sort of a jumble garbage store.
Yeah, that's right. That's all it is now.
It used to have all
there were some good
here.
Things in it. I used to go down there and browse through there. I bought the odd thing down there, too.
Look at that bayonets in the original Greece that had never been taken
right.
out.
Yeah.
Gorgeous stuff.
Yeah.
And all sorts of military screws, bolts,
that's
nuts.
That's right. Yeah. And